Welcome back to Evolution of a Snake. I'm Zach.
And I am Madeline.
And we're bringing you something very interesting today. Today, we want to talk about the butterfly effect in Taylor's career. Madeline, can you describe to everybody what a butterfly effect is?
Well, I think it's best described by the hit 2003-2004 film starring Ashton Kutcher. If anybody's seen it, Zach, have you seen it?
No. As usual.
Many people have. That's actually, when I was a kid, I thought that invented the butterfly effect reference. But the butterfly effect is essentially a flap of a butterfly's wings can change the course of history. For example, if you were to go back in time and just change one thing just slightly, when you went back forward, everything would be different in the future because you made that one little change.
Taylor asks herself this question: if one thing had been different, would everything be different today? And our answer in this episode of today's podcast is yes. The answer is everything would be totally different. So we're going to go year by year, well, era by era through Taylor's career and identify a decision that could have altered the course of her career. And we're going to talk you through it. So strap in. Go to patreon.com/swiftologist for more episodes weekly. Madeline now has a YouTube channel. She has two iconic videos uploaded. Go subscribe. Let's get into it. Madeline, take us back to Honky Tonk.
I'll take you back right to the beginning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to debut era. Now, debut is in the news. Debut is in the press.
Top of mind.
Debut is top of mind. We're talking debut TV. The clock is kind of ticking on an announcement. So I'm in the next few weeks, or it's chopped liver, girls. So I'm kind of get used to that idea, even though I have believed that debut TV was coming this October for years at this point. But she's top of mind. Everybody's thinking debut. And I think going into debut, there's an obvious butterfly effect that I think a lot of people would immediately think of. And the one that I think a lot of people would think of is, oh, what if she wasn't country in the beginning? And I said, that's not interesting, because I feel like everybody's kind of wondered about that. And it's just like, it's too foundational to the lore and the texts.
It's too hard. It's like, everything would be different. She wouldn't be her.
She wouldn't be her. She'd be some bastardized version of herself. And I wouldn't be able to take that. A lot of, because I had the early eras, there's a lot of, I'm bastardizing the canon here, but it's all for fun. It's all for giggles. It's all for laughs. So here's what I came up with. This is really going to gag the girls, because I was thinking. One of the most important, and dare I say, revolutionary parts of Taylor's early career is how when she started in country, for her generation, for the teenage girls of the world, there really wasn't someone who was comparable to what she was doing in the sense that she was making music for G-I-R-L-S girls. Not for old dudes, not for women in older demographics either. Not for the cowboys out there roping and slopping and doing this, that, and the other thing. She made music for girls in high school and middle school. That's what she set out to do. She made country music for girls, which at the time, there wasn't a lot of that going around in popular country music. So my butterfly effect is, what if instead of allowing her to stay true to herself and her diaristic writing as a girl, what if they, the man, tried to reshape her into something that would have been palatable to older country demographics? So what if it wasn't Teardrops on My Guitar? What if it wasn't Stay Beautiful? What if it wasn't Should Have Said No? What if, walk with me, it was What Do You Say from The Vault? Many people recognize that song. What if it was
Get
Who I've
here.
Always Been from
Scram.
The
Vault?
What if it was Sweet Tea and God's Graces from the
yes.
vault?
Well, now that I'm saying yes.
See, I think there was a moment, like in her career at the very beginning when they were kind of like workshopping her and trialing her, and she was also figuring out, okay, what's my voice? Where like there was a little bit of that going on where they were like, let's try to get you to appeal to another demographic. And it wasn't working. If you've heard those songs, you know that ain't working.
$10.
I think the closest
six-pack.
They came. Oh, don't bring that up. Closer to a cowboy.
She's like 14 years old. 14.
The closest they came, I think, was actually one of the smartest moves they made was with Tim McGraw as the lead single for Taylor, because it invokes a classic old guy in country, like, for lack of a better term. He's like the ideal of country male music at the time, and she invokes him, but it's still like a teenage girl song. It's actually really brilliant for like a debut of what she was trying to do. If you think about it, they cooked on that one. But I'm asking you, walk with me. What if she was, I mean, who's somebody who kind of did this? It's not Kacey Musgraves.
Like a young girl?
It's not Megan Maroney, I don't think. It's not Kelsey Ballerini. Oh, they're not doing this.
What if we look to like the early days of a Shania Twain? I'm not that familiar with her career, but I can't imagine she was coming out singing about, you know, young girls. Sheryl Crow. Well, she's not really applicable here.
No, not Reba. Leanne Rimes? Martina McBride. Like, Leanne Rimes was interesting because she started like pivoting pop. Really quick.
Quite quickly.
Yeah. There's nobody.
It's an interesting. No, there is nobody that really did that. I think what is so foundational to Taylor lore as well is that Sony development deal yielded so many songs that are really not good, but it was an important exercise of her like writing towards the good stuff. And she did write good stuff while she was with them, but there's plenty more stuff that doesn't even sound like it would belong on debut. And it was finding a place that believed in her and a man with a record deal who believed in her that allowed her to focus on what she was actually good at. Because if I remember correctly, like something that Taylor was told a lot was no one cares about the teenage girl's perspective. Like you need to work with these older country songwriters. You need to let them influence you. You need to take their notes. And from such a young age, she was determined to make it her own words. And I think also she probably correctly realized the USP of Taylor Swift is her story. It's not the singing. It's not the singing. It's not the instrument playing. It's not the dancing. It's not the scandalous moments. It really was about, the only reason why she was even driven to do it in the first place was because she wanted to tell her stories. So it's like when you take that out of it, she's nothing, especially in those early days.
Yeah, especially in a song where she's going, I like my truck big, I like my music loud, I got my cowboy hat on. It's like, okay, so I get that you're doing like kind of a little bit of a country cosplay, but even this is so far removed from reality, you have to admit.
They did try to get her to do a Carrie Underwood thing. They really did try on some of those vault tracks, but you know what?
Well, Carrie Underwood.
Thank God she didn't go with
that's
that.
That's who we were trying to come up with. Carrie Underwood, I mean, she wasn't a teenager, but she was like young 20s. She was immediately doing like Reba McEntire style. Like,
yeah, immediately. Doug Mack. Like it was straight away, I've been married for years and now I need a divorce.
And that's why Taylor and Carrie never got
along. Actually, a good example. The chicks got to be young. They did. The Cowboy Take Me Away, Wide Open Spaces. They definitely got to be young. And they didn't write a lot of that early material either. So I guess there was a precedent for letting teenage girls sing teenage girls things, but not of their own words.
No, that was definitely the key that nobody realized that they needed to open this like special sort of like
Except
box
for Scott
to bring
Bruschetta.
In.
I hate to say it. Like he understood.
He did.
Now he will be punished forever and will never have
and
a good day in his life.
And now he's going
Amen.
To hell. Welcome to hell.
Sticks. We'll see you
so
there.
So that was my butterfly effect for the debut era. It's something interesting to think about. Something to ponder.
It is. The butterfly effect scares me because I'm like invisible string. You know, everything is as it should be and as it has been. But this is a fun exercise in revising the historical record.
It is, and it's about to get really fun. So next up, I have Fearless. So this was a really hard one. This was a really difficult one. I genuinely fought for my life to come up with something music-wise and career-wise. I had to go relationship-wise because I said I can't – even the sheer prospect of editing this in any way, shape, or form is so abhorrent to me. I simply have to turn to the men, and I turned to the men in a big way. Famously, during this era – and I mean after the album was out – Taylor dated a certain someone from a certain huge film series. Actually, did you know that Taylor Lautner dated Selena Gomez before Taylor Swift? I forgot about this.
I did not know that, but I've seen pictures of them hanging out together. Wow. You know what? Better than revenge. It's ironic.
There's something to that. There's something to that.
She was projecting. No amount of vintage dresses could be
dignity. She was projecting. So she dated Taylor Lautner during a time period where I was completely obsessed with Taylor Swift and Twilight. But Taylor Lautner is not the person that I was obsessed with. And actually, I hated him low-key because he was Jacob and this was very serious to me. I was a Team Edward girl. And to this day, I would be. Just like Robert Pattinson said, no one is Team Jacob. That was fake.
It's true.
I don't believe they're real. Anybody who says they were Team Jacob, I'm like, you weren't real.
They just wanted to see him with his shirt off again.
And that's all he brought to the role.
And it's so valid. He did it really well. He did that really well.
And now all he's doing is flipping around at Eras Tour movie screenings.
Not so good.
He's at the AMC theater, flipping around at the front of the movie.
He's still at the restaurant. He's still at the restaurant.
That's the definition of being at the restaurant.
With his wife and baby, still there.
Thinking about how unpalatable the future is today with this particular flop from Taylor's dating history, thinking about how at the time there was somebody I would have much rather her dated, I'm asking the question, what if she dated Robert Pattinson instead of Taylor Lautner?
I think he would have destroyed her lives in unimaginable ways. I think that we would have arrived at a Dear John a lot sooner.
Walk with me. Imagine if on that dark day in September, not the one you're thinking of, the other one, the one where Kanye West came up on stage. What if on that dark day in September, it was not Taylor Lautner standing behind her, it was Robert Pattinson? What would have happened on that stage? It could have gone so differently. Think about
it. It could have gone so differently. I think also maybe Taylor would have had her indie awakening a little bit sooner because Robert Pattinson has a Joe Alwyn flair to him. He's a lot more charismatic and engaging. Obviously, Joe Alwyn is nothing, blah, blah, blah. But, like, they are of the same, like, scene, I would say. But Robert Pattinson is, like, more self-aware and he's funnier. I don't know. Did Kristen come away from their relationship traumatized by him or by the experience of being with him? You just did this video. So how would Taylor walk away from it?
What she's said about it, she's always said he's a great guy. I don't think she ever said, I'm traumatized by Rob. Rob did something so horrible. I think she really, it was like a codependent relationship because of what was going on. If anything, like that's the worst that it was. But I don't think she would ever say he did something wrong or he was so evil or he belittled me or put me down or anything like that. I don't think she has any feelings like that. So no, I think I don't know. I think we have to talk to FKA Twigs about that. If we want to get to how is Robert Pattinson evil, if he is, let's talk to Twigs.
I think, unfortunately, as well, when I think about Taylor Squared, which was a huge deal to me at the time, just because they were both named Taylor, I just loved that about it, and I loved Taylor Squared, and I thought it was adorable. I think the material that he inspired is not exactly, like, her most sterling credential, you know? Like, there's some good stuff in there, but it's pretty much, what is it, Back to December?
That's it.
Maybe Today Was a Fairy Tale, perhaps.
Well, you wore a dark gray t-shirt. He's been known.
That's kind of all he's able to do as well. Like, that's kind of the beginning and end of Taylor Lautner's appeal romantically is you wore a dark gray t-shirt. You told me I was pretty when I looked like a mess. T-shirt. And then that's it. It ends there. So Robert Pattinson would have really fundamentally altered the course of Speak Now because she would have dated him longer than Taylor Lautner. There's nothing going on in that bag of rocks up there for Taylor Lautner.
Free. I'll tell you that for free. It would have been very
serious. But
Robert
Pattinson, he's twisted.
Right, he's demented. It also would have put Taylor more in Kristen's orbit. I think, like, dating Taylor Lautner, it wasn't the same as if you dated Robert Pattinson. Like, yeah, they're in the movie together and all that.
Wait, she would have been public enemy number one. Don't forget about that. She would have been the whore. Bitch, whore, homewrecker, interrupting. Oh my God, it would have been so bad for her.
It would have been like pre-Harry Styles, pre-Harry Styles. One Direction, pre-One Direction. That would have been crazy. I was thinking Kristen and Taylor could have been best friends. That's what I was thinking.
Oh, unlikely. Unlikely.
Well, it is like, actually.
She would have been Camila Bell and Kristen would be
Kristen. Taylor. Kristen's disposition is such that I think it's like oil and water. It's like Miley and Taylor, you know?
Yes, exactly.
Like, it's nothing. We don't have any issues. She's a cute girl. Great gowns, beautiful gowns. But we can't hang out. We don't click. I don't like her little attitude.
You know what it is? It's as simple as I wake up smiling, you wake up frowning.
Yeah, I wake up and I have my, you know, matcha latte tea or my, you know, green juice and you immediately roll over and you grab your water bong and you take a hit. That's what it is. And
that's
we can
a beautiful,
never,
beautiful description.
We can never be friends on that term. I'm not saying that like stoners can't be friends with non-stoners, but like there's non-stoners and then there's Taylor Swift.
Oh, Taylor, you know I mean? Madeline's saying stoners have rights. Okay, cool.
Stoners have rights. Kristen Stewart has rights, specifically.
Kristen Stewart has rights, and so does
Everybody
Taylor.
Else.
And she, I'm glad she didn't date Robert Pattinson, to be honest, because that would have been an absolute hellscape to navigate on the internet. In the fandom spaces, it would have just been war. Mm.
It would have been a happy day for me. It would have been a
but
real
But nobody cared
happy
about Taylor Lautner, so everybody said, go ahead.
So we won. So this is how Swifties have always won in the end. You see how that works? Mm-hmm. So yeah. That was my sort of kooky think about this. For
a little
the
blue in your era. Hair.
Yeah,
I like that.
Something a little bit crazy.
Can we talk about the thing no one warns you about when you start putting merch products out into the world? It is not the creative part, because the creative part is the fun part.
Right. The creative part takes like 10 minutes. Then suddenly you're neck deep in inventory spreadsheets, customer emails, checkout links that don't work, and you're basically running a logistics company you never applied to run.
When I started thinking seriously about opening our storefront, that was exactly my fear. I'd get buried in admin instead of actually making anything, which is why I want to talk about the sponsor of today's episode, Shopify.
Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses, from massive global brands down to someone with literally just an idea and a laptop. It powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US.
What I like is that it doesn't assume you already know what you're doing. Shopify has ready-made design templates, so your storefront looks like an actual brand from day one, instead of something held together with duct tape and diva prayers. You can launch and start selling in a few simple steps, no coding and no design degree required.
And checkout is handled through Shop Pay, which is one of the fastest checkout experiences out there. Fewer steps means fewer people abandoning their cart halfway through digging for their card number, which means more of those sales actually go through.
That combination matters so much when you're a one-person operation trying to be the creative director, the accountant, and customer service all at once. A store that looks polished and checks out fast basically does half the selling for you.
Plus, everything lives in one dashboard. Inventory, payments, analytics, marketing, instead of 17 tabs open where you've forgotten which platform is even tracking what.
If you're trying to get people to actually find your store, Shopify helps there too. You can build email and social campaigns without needing a whole marketing team behind you.
Start your business today with the industry's best business partner, Shopify, and start hearing that for yourself.
Sign up for your 3-day free trial, then just $1 a month for your first 3 months at shopify.com/EOS.
Go to shopify.com/EOS.
That's shopify.com/EOS.
Summer is finally over, and that means it's time to start stocking your closet with those perfect, cozy, everyday pieces that elevate your wardrobe, all while making it look effortlessly chic. If you're looking for thoughtfully crafted sweaters, the perfect jeans for every day, or that goes with every outfit handbag, look no further than today's sponsor, Quince.
Quince makes the perfect everyday essentials for your wardrobe using premium materials like Mongolian cashmere, organic cotton, and washable silk. So when you're buying a Quince sweater, you're buying a well-made, durable product that will stay in your closet season after season instead of one that just falls apart after a few washes.
I'm personally absolutely obsessed with Quince's sweaters, particularly their cotton crew neck sweater, which I'm wearing today, and that I actually own in two different colors because I love it so much. It's truly the quintessential, or should I say, quince-essential, everyday autumn and winter sweater that's perfectly cozy without being too heavy or too light. It's also incredibly durable, and I know this because I wore my crew neck sweater at least once a week last fall and washed it just as often, and it's still holding up incredibly well, like I only just bought it.
And the best part of it all is that while Quince may be chic and elevated and well made, it's also affordable. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands because they work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middleman, and you know you're paying for excellent quality.
So don't wait and find the fall pieces you'll reach for the most at Quince. You can download the Quince app for app-exclusive offers or go to quince.com/snake to get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. And it's now available in Canada and the UK too. Remember, that's quince.com/snake. So on to Speak Now. This is another one where I said I'd rather blow my brains out than alter this in any way, shape, or form. But I came up with a little something. I love the Speak Now era. It's probably my favorite nostalgic Taylor era. It's probably my safest Taylor space is how I would describe it. So messing with it feels wrong. But I did come up with something a little bit interesting. So here's my butterfly effect. What if because this was kind of the first time she was writing extensively about high-profile relationships that she had experienced in the last couple of years of her life, what if, instead of writing extensively about them, she took the quote-unquote high road and didn't write anything specific about Joe Jonas or John Mayer or Taylor Lautner on the album? What if she wasn't, so to speak, speaking now and was instead being enchanted, as some people like to call it? What if it was a more fairy tale leaning album than it was a diaristic, totally self-written, I'm going to prove myself as a writer girl, I'm going to tell my stories kind of an album? What if she said, I'm not actually going to make a career on writing about my public personal relationships because it would upset the subject of my songs? So I'm going to keep all that close to my chest and write from empathy, or at least write songs more vaguely and not try to do Dear John or write Your Tan Skin in the Back to December lyrics. She made
a
choice.
The Gracie Abrams effect. That's literally what it is. That's what the fate has befallen her. There is also Speak Now is such a pivotal adult moment in her discography. It's literally her I'm not a girl, not yet a woman moment. But what was really integral about it that I think helped her to become serious are the songs like Dear John and are the disclosures and are the confessions, especially now that she's starting to date people that people actually know, there is organic interest to drum up. So that was, it was just in the earlier works, her relationships were such an integral part of discussing the work for her, not even just for the fans and the public and the media. Like, she could pretend all she wanted that she was not naming names, but she was always naming names and deliberately and on purpose. So to shy away from that, I feel like it would have hindered her unnecessarily as a writer.
Creatively. I think it would have made, I mean, Red wouldn't have happened the way it happened. 1989 wouldn't have happened. Reputation wouldn't have, I mean, like, nothing would have happened. It would have been like, almost like putting her in handcuffs and like, you can't do what you want to do. And like, we're going to almost like hold you back. Because I just don't really see, obviously Taylor would be a good songwriter, whether she was writing songs about other people's lives or her own life. That's not up for debate. But it's like, I wonder sometimes, like, if she hadn't written about her high profile relationships, would it have been received differently?
It's a really interesting question. And I think the answer to that question sort of arrives later in the discography with A Midnights and with A Showgirl. Like, those are albums where she is intentionally withholding. And one of them is significantly more successful than the other. But even still, if you're analyzing them with no context, no lore, would you be assessing them of the same caliber? Speak Now can stand on its own. The disclosures aren't necessary to really understand what's going on. It's clear. Like, Dear John, whether you know it's about John Mayer or not, like, you know exactly what she's saying, what she's talking about. It's essential, but it's not like completely, you wouldn't get anything without it. But I think that would really have changed Speak Now. It would have made it like also a more teen pop album, more like La La La, I'm Princess.
Because there's like such adult sort of turning point, like in your girlhood into young womanhood moments on the album, like Dear John, kind of like Back to December too, being able to apologize, like something like that is pretty huge for becoming into your 20s, and you know, Never Grow Up, like all these really personal songs, like you take the personal out of it and it's like, oh, it's just kind of like, it really would kind of code Disney. Like, it would code a Here We Go Again, Demi Lovato, or a I Love You Like a Love Song, Baby. I mean, these are hits, but
they are, but they're not
Taylor
hits.
They don't have the same sauce. Right, exactly.
Well, also, she was really, I think, deliberately, this is an interesting thing that we haven't fully explored, I think, but is so interesting, is like how much she was being shoved into that teen pop category when it didn't apply. Like, it simply wasn't applicable to equate her, even at debut, with any of those Disney-fronted projects from Miley, Selena, or Demi at the time. Not comparable. Simply not comparable. And it's interesting because Taylor didn't come up through the Disney machine, and yet she was like lumped in with all of those other girls regardless. And I think she benefited from it too, because like she got to be in the Hannah Montana movie. Those things put her on in a way. But Speak Now to me was her very intentionally being like, okay, so I'm not that. Whatever that is, that's not my bag. There's no radio hit on this album. All these songs are like 4 minutes long. I wrote all of them by myself. There's an intentional, this is me, I'm not that.
Right. And I think if we took that away, Speak Now, who is she?
We'd be bankrupt.
Red, who is she?
We'd be bankrupt.
1989, who is she?
No, I don't like this.
It'd be a mess.
I don't like to think about this.
It'd be a mess. So that's your thought. Keep that in the back of your minds next time you're listening to Speak Now, ladies. Maybe it'll make you appreciate it just a little bit more.
Yeah, be grateful that way.
Be grateful that you're not living in my nightmare scenario timeline. All right, next up is Red. Now, this one, you know I had to give it up for a little bit of if she's going to sing Good Luck. You know I had to give it up to the Queenie, Joni Mitchell. So a piece of lore about the Red era. I know all of you know this, but just to reiterate for those of you who don't, she was, like, leading up to the release of the album a little bit and, like, before the era, there were rumors about her playing Joni Mitchell in a biopic. Joni Mitchell scrapped it and said, absolutely not. And she said, if she's going to sing, good luck, about Taylor Swift. And you know what? There's a little bit of tea there. There's a little bit of... There's something to that. Was it hilarious? Absolutely. Did it change Taylor's life forever going forward? And has she ever let it go? Absolutely not. But The point is, before she said that in a magazine, I think that Joni Mitchell was a critical, crucial influence on the development of Red, inspired perhaps by Joni Mitchell's Blue, famously. I think she was listening to a lot of Joni Mitchell. And actually, we do kind of know that because of the Speak Now arm lyrics. As she's writing Red on the road performing the Speak Now tour, she's doing Joni Mitchell arm lyrics. I think she did it at least 4 or 5 times. I mean, we did the arm lyrics video. We should know this. She did it many times, a Joni Mitchell reference. So Joni Mitchell's on the mind. She's, you know, making this Red album inspired by the Blue record. Obviously, Joni Mitchell is one of the core inspirations and influences behind, like, Red as we have come to understand, like, what it is, what the context it came from, the theming of it, the photo shoot, even everything is very like 70s, kind of like what we would call in 2012 hipster, what you might have called in the 1970s hippie-ish, leaning rocker kind of chick vibe. I propose to all of you, what if it wasn't Joni Mitchell who was the main source of inspiration for Red, but it was instead Stevie Nicks?
Yes,
because I think that while you could argue Stevie Nicks and Joni Mitchell have a little bit of something in common, and I'll give you that, but there is a divergence in where they sort of their vibe. Joni Mitchell is very, like, singer-songwriter, again, like, hippie style, give peace a chance kind of a girly.
She's not really into the aesthetics either. She's like, these are my songs, listen to them. Stevie is, like, world-building.
Stevie's
more like Taylor.
A W-I-T-C-H witch.
Put my scarf on the mic stand.
Right. She's very, like, flamboyant comes to mind, especially for the time period. She was very, you know, big
divine
hair,
femme.
Outfits, you know, the whole thing. And I think that would have really shifted, definitely the photo shoot, definitely a lot of the vibes of, like, what we understand about the record. But I wonder what it would have done sonically to the album. It's kind of hard to imagine. I don't know what it would have done for the songwriting, because that was all about her personal experiences, but I do wonder what it would have done for her, like, direction for when she came in to work with producers, like, okay, this is my vision. I think it could have been kind
can
of
I
a
pray?
Sexy little number.
Can I say I had a religious thought just now when you said that. We have True. That. We have Red inspired by Stevie Nicks. It's called the Tortured Poets Department.
Oh, you said that. Oh,
it's literally that. When that came to me, I was like, that's exactly what the fuck it is. That's where the similarities are. Red and TTPD are similar in theme and scope and intention, but sound execution completely different. And actually, like, when I'm listening to Tortured Poets, it's her witchiest album for sure. It has the most, like, the prophecy. I look in people's windows, even the albatross. Like, there are a lot of, like, mythical images. And she's also in conversation with another writer, Maddie Healy, which is very Stevie Nicks. That was also the difference. Well, Joni Mitchell was in conversation with people too, but, like, Stevie Nicks was in conversation with the person she was making the music with. And that's almost like what Taylor and Maddie went through together, and which is why we desperately need the Maddie Healy Tortured Poets Department to, like, close the loop. We really, really need that. But Stevie Nicks, pew, there we go. There's the seed for our Tortured Poets is Red video.
This is powerful stuff. This is really powerful stuff.
See about that butterfly effect?
You see about that butterfly effect? The butterfly effect works in so many mysterious ways. And it takes us, it answers questions we've always asked.
Even the torture poet's pictures are very Stevie Nicks coded, now that I think about it. Her hair?
They are. And you know, we have dunked on them. We've dunked on them a lot. I've actually never thought about her as a reference point, but like, if you think about it, that actually does make a lot of sense. So I'm looking at this picture. I mean, hello.
Hello.
That's Stevie Nicks. That's so strange.
Well, we didn't like the pictures because they were just kind of low effort. That it wasn't that they weren't good pictures. It was just kind of like, well, can we come up with something else? But, you know, for the further we get away from torture poets, the more perfect it becomes to me. So I'm saying today, on this day, the visuals are iconic and exactly what they needed to be. And
Stevie Nicks, you did it again. Would I get rid of the poem? Absolutely, I would.
100%. Burned immediately.
That's probably one of the only things. And it's like, Stevie, what happened?
Nice
I remember
girl.
Reading it and thinking this is my introduction to the album. And I was like, what the fuck does this mean?
Did you read it before really you listened?
Yeah, I read it because I thought it was
the
introduction.
Glad I didn't.
I was
girl.
Like, what? And then I had to listen to Fortnite. All right, so
even Fortnite is Stevie coded. I'm saying it.
No,
it's witchy.
And you're right. That's the thing. But in the context of the poem,
Torture Poets is kind of more of a Joni Mitchell song because it's like the Hotel Chelsea, like the New York downtown scene. Mm-hmm. But you know what? The idea of having the Red album photo shoot taken away from me is deeply disturbing because I think that may be her best album visual of all time.
It's pretty great. Honestly, I don't know if I really consider it to be topped. There's ones I like as much as Red, but I don't know if there's any that I like more than.
There's just so many outfits, and it's all shot on film. It's like a bunch of different setups, and I feel like every time I go looking for photos from it, I find ones I haven't seen before.
Yeah, all the time. I love the ones that are in, you probably do remember this, that were in the album booklet on Sad, Beautiful, Tragic, where she has like a flower crown or something in her hair. Those are my favorite ones. I think about that.
I love
the
ones of her in the stream.
Oh, those are so nice. I love the ones with the guitar, the State of Grace one.
Oh,
it's a really good photo shoot. No, it's like we have been in a drought. The pictures. Bring us back.
Pictures.
All right. Thank you so much, Joni Mitchell, for reminding Taylor that she can be humbled. She can be.
And she needs to be from time to time.
So up next is 1989. This was a hard one because it's so set in stone and it's like one of the most famous eras and like the iconography and everything about it is, for lack of a better word, iconic. So it's really hard to mess with it. It's almost perfection in a lot of ways in terms of the music itself. So there's not really a lot that I want to touch there. But I will meddle in the personal affairs. I will meddle. There are some issues to be fixed there. I would like to ask the question, what if she wasn't, at the time, on a crusade to become the most popular, famous girl in the room that everybody loved? What if she wasn't desperately trying to fill the lunch tables of her past with every girl who paid her a compliment? What if she cooled it on Please Welcome to the Stage? What if she didn't go seeking that external validation from random famous people? What if there was no girl squad? What if she just focused on the work and maintaining her real friendships? I ask the question, if she did that, if she said, I don't care about any of that stuff, I'm just going to do me and focus on my career and my friendships, would the cancellation have happened the way that it did? Or more specifically, would people have found her less annoying if there wasn't this sort of like desperate please like me edge to 1989.
Wow, you're really busting open a can of worms here.
I'm asking.
No, it's a great question. I think, you know, the mess and the drama was so much part of why 1989 was a success. It was such a marketing tool more than anything else. So it was like, would 1989 have been as big as it was as an album without that? I'm not sure. But would she have been able to have continued her forays into pop with less, shall we say, narrative cleanup to do? Had she focused on, and it's weird because 1989 was the cool girl era. It was like when people actually kind of like agreed Taylor Swift is kind of cool. And she was acting in a deeply loserific way. Like, she was really being a loser constantly.
That's ironic.
Every day, please like me. Calling every famous person and asking them to strut down, having Matt LeBlanc doing the style catwalk, humiliating. That's pick me.
And he said yes. That's the gag.
They kept picking.
They kept picking. She was saying pick me, but in her defense, they kept picking.
No, they kept picking her. But I always think of the 1989 Grammys where I'm like, you seem to know that you're at a breaking point. Like, she was fraught when she got to the Grammys for 1989. Like, it was all about to fall apart. She had just held on so tightly to being in control of everything that was said about her. And it's like, diva, you have to let some of that go. You're a public figure. She really wanted to Kim Jong-un the media and be like, you will never say bad things about me. And this is when she started to get really litigious as well. I don't know.
It would have changed everything. I'll tell you that for free. Would people have found her to be less takedownable? I guess is the question, if she wasn't desperate to be liked to that extent.
I don't think she would have gotten a number one with Bad Blood without having that nonsense behind it. Like, that just wouldn't have happened. So, but then it's like, well, would another organic, if we had given Style a minute to cook and push that as the fourth single or the third single with a proper like rollout and a better music video and more attention paid, would that not have gone number one just on the basis of it being a great song? But like, Taylor seems to not care about the quality of a number one. She just wants to get to the spot. She doesn't really care if it's like a staple number one or if it's an organic number one. She just wants to get up there. So I think she like had her taste with Blank Space and Shake It Off and was like, well, I have a nuclear button here that I can press and launch an attack on Katy Perry whenever I like. And it seems as though I need to take her down. And it's also like, you spent a lot of time during 1989 scheming and strategizing about how to conquer. What if you said, let's hold hands? What if you said, where are my girls? What if you did Daisy Chainfields?
We all got
crowns. What if you did that? Imagine that, Taylor and her girl boss era doing like female Coachella. She would never.
That would have changed the course of history. I honestly think that would have stopped the Trump presidency. He wouldn't have made it if Taylor had only said.
No, for real. I'm making a video about Daisy Chain this week, so it's on the mind. But like, I was thinking, would Taylor have ever done that? Would she have ever done something like that? And the difference between like the millennial and the Gen Z pop stars, I think, is that the millennial pop stars came up thinking there can only be one. There's only one female pop star, and it has to be me, and everyone else falls by the wayside. This younger generation, something that I like about them is they're much more like, well, let's share.
I definitely have a sense, especially with like Chappell Roan, Addison Rae, Olivia Dean, Olivia Rodrigo, like all of the Gen Z girls, like it's just not a competition as much. No. And like they're down to show up at each other's shows and like show up supporting each other. They're down to clap and cheer for one another, as opposed to back in the day, it was really like Taylor won over Lady Gaga and she will suffer the consequences for the rest of her life for doing this abominable evil upon the
nation. Or the Katy Perry versus Lady Gaga number one with roar and applause. Like, we just don't see that anymore.
Yeah.
Which is good.
The only people that we see it with is again, Taylor Swift. And like the millennial generation of pop stars, like Taylor Swift, you'll see it from the Beyonce fans, not from Beyonce herself, mind you. I just want to be clear. Beyonce has no idea any of this even happens.
No, but she's too blessed to be stressed. Between the Swifties
and the Beehive, there's a lot of that going on. I think Little Monsters are kind of, I don't know that they're really marching anymore. I think they've put their paws down.
They march.
Oh, do they? I don't know about that. I haven't been doing the Little Monster education. But my point is, I think back in the day, it was really, I think Taylor learned, you know, she kind of grew up in the Britney versus Christina sort of a thing. Mm-hmm.
Also the chicks.
The Avril Lavigne versus Britney thing. Like, every girl who was different hated the other one. You know, you have to be the anti-Britney. If you don't act like Britney, then you're the anti-Britney, all that kind of stuff. So I think that really, that gets in your mind. It's not
Yeah, and
fault,
also the destroy but- Katy Perry thing was like a business move. She was saying, I want to get into pop now. There can only be one. She's my biggest competitor for that currently. Therefore, nuclear war. But imagine.
And to that I say.
Imagine, imagine all.
You may say I'm a dreamer.
And then no one would be calling her a girl boss feminist.
No, but unfortunately, we had the timeline we had.
Unfortunately,
Unfortunately,
we have to work with the material that we've got.
So that was my 1989 butterfly effect. It makes you think. It
Oh,
makes
it
you
made me
think.
think deeply.
For reputation, this is another kind of obvious one that I think a lot of people automatically think of a specific thing. I think a lot of people would think of the karma theory or about there having been a secret album already having been made before she scrapped it in favor of reputation. I'm not
Lies,
interested in any of
wrong.
that. Been there, done that. It's not interesting. We played
It's
it
also not
out.
real.
It never happened. It never happened. My butterfly effect is, what if you just called Taylor up? What if Kim called
No,
Taylor
say it.
up?
What if?
What if Kanye called Taylor up? What if Kim and Kanye said, you know what? We were wrong. We were wrong. We didn't properly explain to you what the song was. We weren't clear on what was going on. We were kind of using you to get a hit. We admit it. We were wrong, Taylor, and we're sorry because we put you on blast and we had you on the cancel train. We were wrong.
Would
We
this have happened
apologize.
before or after the videos
Before
leaked? Before the videos on Snapchat?
the videos. So let's just pretend it was all, you know what I'm saying?
The song comes out, Taylor's mad, she makes her shady Grammy speech, Kim calls.
Kim calls. Listen, lady, I didn't know. I didn't know.
Wasn't familiar. I personally view that bitch as a term of endearment,
I
and
didn't know.
I invite you to call me that bitch whenever you like.
Right.
I
Right.
think,
Now,
wow, that would have really changed the course of history. There'd be no
I
snake. There'd be no evolution of a
think
snake.
I think reputation would have become lover.
Oh, well, because she was in love. But would she have found Joe and clung to him in that way if she
Oh,
wasn't
good
running
question. I
from
didn't even think about
something?
that. I didn't even think about that. Maybe
Would
this is
she
when
have
she
left
dated
Calvin
Robert
Harris?
Pattinson.
Would she have
This is
stayed
when
with Tom
she
Hiddleston? This one is really like,
Oh, this changes everything. I was thinking of it in specifically in terms of like the music. So I wasn't thinking of the external factors, but like there, I'm not sure that there would have been a Joe Alwyn.
I
Oh
don't think so
no.
either, because she was really drawn to him because he lived like far away and because he was like a flop and not famous, so he didn't care about what was going on with her. He could only stand to benefit from it. And he offered her a version of life that she'd never thought of before, which I don't think she would have thought of. I want to go into hiding. That's not a natural impulse for her unless she was hiding from something. So we could have been marked safe from this is the year that Joe Alwyn's going to be the it boy.
That would have been really nice because it was about 6 years of that.
It's still
It's this
happening.
year, boys. It can still happen. Does anybody want to fall in love with me this January, February, March, April, May, June,
Not
July?
interested. The world says
Not
no. The
interested.
world says no. I don't like
What if
that
we call
one.
No,
There'd
what
be
if we
no
call
evolution
Taylor
of a
out?
snake. Hello.
There'd be no EOAS, there'd be no reputation. I think because the thing is, I feel like this is kind of strange to think about somebody else's life, but I do think it kind of strongly. I think this is something that, for better or for worse, but I do think for better, had to happen.
Oh,
In the
for sure.
timeline we're in, like it needed to happen because I think Taylor at the time wouldn't have seen it this way, but now I think she does. There wouldn't be this if there hadn't been you.
A lot of things happened because of that. Like sometimes like growth and change can be extremely painful when you're experiencing it, but you're better for it on the other side. And that's kind of what this was. It fueled her so much. Like it's given her so much creative stimulation. She's still fucking talking about it. Like it is a fruitful experience for her. And I don't know that she'd really had a lot of hardship up until then, you know? Like she'd had it pretty good in the public eye. I mean, she of course she had her the national lightning rod for slut shaming, but overwhelmingly she was beloved and adored by the wider public. This was the first time that that perspective really shifted.
And it changed everything. It's the reason we have, I would argue, pretty much every album we have right now.
That's Loca. Thank you. That was scary. Well, it's time for me to take over, and I admittedly got the easier part of the job because I'm in the latter half. So the foundational texts have already been created, and it's a lot easier to go in and fiddle with a few specific things. But when it comes to Lover, There are a couple of things that I was thinking about that would have like really altered the course of its existence. The first thing would be, what if we didn't try to appeal to children? That would be step number one. Mm-hmm. Like, what if we, in our 30th year on this earth as a successful pop star with adult fans, didn't randomly side quest into trying to appeal to children? I don't know why you would try to do that, why you thought it was a good idea. I think it was some sort of like fear of aging that prompted this, and fear of irrelevancy. But nothing makes you feel more irrelevant to adult than trying to seem like a child. So that wasn't great. But I think that in tandem with, we talk a lot about how Mi is the worst creative decision of her career, and I stand by that. That's the low-hanging fruit here. What if she didn't do Mi? Right. I think that you need to calm down. The choice of writing that, making the music video, doing it the way that she did, has had a worse net negative impact on her career because it went on to inspire things such as Miss Americana, where she made a bunch of statements, of strongly worded, vague statements that have been held against her for the rest of her career. She simply was saying stuff that she wasn't ready to follow through on or wasn't interested enough to follow through on. And the immediate critique of you need to calm down was, this is fake. This is hollow. You're doing this for yourself. And unfortunately, as time has gone on, that has only continued to age poorly. And there may be XYZ valid reason why she doesn't say XYZ thing. However, there is a precedent that has been set of Taylor speaking out about issues that are important to her and mm-hmm. issues that are important to people other than her. And had she not done that, I think people's expectations of what she's supposed to offer to society would be different. And also, Lover, if she had just gone straight from like Mi into Lover or Mi into literally any other song, people would have been like, okay, she's back. You Need to Calm Down was like, she's doubling down.
Boom, 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 boom.
Horrible.
Boom, 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 boom. But there is kind of something to her incredibly strong statements that she made. She said things like, I refuse to be muzzled anymore.
I will never let that happen again.
I'm never going to be silent again. It wasn't just, I'm speaking up now, mind the pun. I'm saying stuff now. This is what I believe in right now. It was, I will never be silent again. And it's like, see, we have you on candid camera saying that. And it's now 2026 and it's the cricket machine. I don't think she would be getting such strong, like, sort of condemnations for a lot of things that she hasn't spoken up on if it weren't for the fact that she looked into the camera and said, I will never again go silent.
And then when you have a song like You Need to Calm Down, which is allegedly about an issue that doesn't pertain to you, and you make it all about yourself somehow, it doesn't look good when you go on to basically go, well, actually, you know, I fucked with the gays a couple years ago. Things, and it's just, everything about it is so ironic. Like, she comes out in support of these specific liberal values when they are at their most popular, and I would say powerful too. Like, and then when those things start to get undone and you actually need a voice to come out, she chooses silence. And it's like, it wouldn't be such a perplexing decision had you not done this first. That's, she set herself up. That's what we said in our Miss America review. She set herself up.
She set herself up. And she really has no one else to blame but herself. I don't get mad when people pull that stuff up from 2019, 2020.
We get her for it.
She said it. She said it. So, I mean, look at the timeline we're in now. It just don't make sense, love.
It don't make sense, love. So I think that if she had stopped trying to pursue, I want to appeal to children, because also there's something very kiddie about You Need to Calm Down as well. It's like, it's a family-friendly version of being gay, which is very conservative coded to me. Like, it's just, it's strange.
I know exactly what you mean. I know exactly what you mean.
Like, let's do a version of the gay experience where we can say, don't step on my gown. And it, like, it really characterizes gay people in a way that I think is reductive.
It's definitely a bit of a caricature, which, again, as you've said many times, it's more proof that she's as straight as can be.
This is the straightest woman in the world.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Lover. Thank you, Lover, for continuing to provide us interesting things. Well, it's Lover to talk about. Up next is a little thing called Folklore. Now, this was kind of like Reputation in that mm-hmm. this single decision altered the course of her existence forever. And when I was thinking about it, I was like, see, the creative decisions, When you really look at the songs in isolation, they're not that different from songs she's done before. Like, it's not a complete like pivot turn. It's just there are no pop hits, and she hadn't been doing, and she'd been doing pop hits for a long time. Like, a lot of this material is reminiscent of things we've heard elsewhere. The subject matter is what's different. But what I was thinking about was, what if she really belabored the point with Folklore? Like, what if it was her first surprise album ever? Part of it was that she said, here it is, the day before, and then it came out. There wasn't time to cook and do math and do a million music videos. The ramifications that a few singles from this and music videos and talking about the album before it came out, the ramifications that could have had on our perception of it is crazy. And also, if you think about it, she never did pre-release singles again after Folklore.
She said, I'm changing it, babe. I'm changing the way I do everything. And you know what? If I can speak, we could go back. We could do things the old-fashioned material. Way. But I think for Folklore and Evermore, it was extremely necessary. I will say that. Like, for those two albums, 100%. And Midnights, I will say that too. And Torture Poets. So you know what?
Did you want more of that?
We could have used it. We could have used A Fate of Ophelia. It would have. A month earlier, hearing The Fate of Ophelia, I would have been like, okay, I see where we're going with this.
I think she's forgotten that there is actually a point to a lead single. Like, if you're doing something different, if you're going in a different direction, maybe it's a good idea to just give people a heads up first.
I agree, especially with Showgirl. There's something really fun about not knowing anything before going into an album. Like, I do enjoy that. But with Showgirl specifically, like, because it was supposed to be like a pop memento, I'm like, this is definitely the moment where this is the moment where a lead single comes in great handy. Obviously, by the numbers, she didn't need it. Like, I'll give you that. But like, for the perception, and I think the reception of it, I think we did. As opposed to something like Torture Poets or Folklore, which I think is better as a surprise.
100%.
I know I'm kind of like, I'm splitting hairs kind of, but like, I mean, these albums are all different. And I think...
Well, Midnights could have done with Antiheroes a lead single. I don't see why that would have derailed anything about the album. I think that would have been good.
Yeah, it's so hard to imagine. That's the thing. It's like, what would I have thought about Antihero out of the context of Midnights? I think I would have thought that it was going to be more... like
pop.
Strictly pop then. And I mean, Midnights is pop, but like, it's darker.
Lo-fi.
I don't know. This is interesting. Wow. We're thinking about timelines right now. We're in the multiverse.
It's scary.
It's freaky.
Up next is a little album that Taylor herself forgets all the time called Evermore. Now, with Evermore, I'm kind of like, what if you, Taylor Swift, didn't just view this as a sister album to Folklore? And what if you instead decided to really campaign for another album of the year win with this? I think if she had done an Evermore studio session and given a really professional, nice, long interview about it too, I think people would have seen it as a really brave, creative evolution from Folklore. And I think she was going to get another album of the year anyway. Can't serve of it being Folklore and Evermore.
You know, I like the things you're saying, young man. I like the ideas that you have. And I think extending Evermore and giving it like a real era, it's kind of clear to me, and it has been clear to me since the European leg of eras, that Taylor doesn't think of it as its own unique thing. And that bothers me. And that bothers a girl. Because on the original North American leg of eras, it was its own unique thing. From everything about it, her outfits, the way it was staged, the attitude and like the vibe of Evermore as compared to the attitude and vibe of Folklore, like they're completely different. And you could see that clear as day on the Eras tour. But like when she took that away, it really kind of stripped Evermore down to like, I'm the forgotten, you know, I'm Cinderella in the basement. And Folklore is my evil stepsister who gets to go to the ball.
That's so wrong. Imagine like a snowy Long Pond studio session with Evermore.
The thought of it makes me feel like going fucking feral. Like I'm rattling my cage. I need that so bad.
And we need live, high quality versions of those songs. Stat.
We need Ivy Live.
Yeah, no, that was my first thought. need it.
HQ. I need an HQ. And also, like, I have the Folklore Long Pond Studio Sessions vinyl. Imagine Evermore live on vinyl. Beautiful Christmas themed. Oh, my God.
It's not too late, Taylor. It's not too late.
It's never too late. It's never too late to finally make good on your promise to the people of the world. She plays favorites. You know what? We have to say
she does. And Evermore was like a side quest for her in her mind. I think she was like, I might as well just put this out. And it was like, but if you put 0.2% more effort into it, it could have been as big as Folklore.
And it would have been, I think, the project would have been taken a lot more. People would have really seen it for what it was. Obviously, Folklore is amazing, but like, Folk Levermore as a total project is crazy. When you think of them like as being like a whole single unit, it's like, wow, that's insane. But like, because you didn't market Evermore and you kind of just said, eh, just kind of felt like putting this out. It's like people don't even realize that Evermore is real. She's real.
And it goes into completely like more dark, deep, demented places. Like right where you left me alone. Hello? That's fucking crazy. And if you had explained that or performed it, people would have picked it up.
People would have picked it up. There's so much to mine on Evermore as well. I think there's always a part of me that's suspected that the reason Evermore Long Pond doesn't exist is because she didn't want to talk about some of those fucking songs. Imagine her sitting down talking about Tolerate It. Let's open the case.
She couldn't. It was a little too close to home. I think also another thing, and this leads me into my next butterfly effect. Mm. I think she was ready to move on to the Taylor's versions. As in, that was the next project. She was laser focused on it. It was mere months later that Fearless came out. Evermore really was like a detour. It was a side quest, unfortunately for us. You could have launched the Taylor's versions later. You could have put Fearless out in the middle of the year, but I digress. I think, imagine if what most artists do when they re-record their catalogs is they just re-record it and upload it. They upload the whole thing at the same time. Imagine if she was not so motivated by spite and pettiness, rightful pettiness. And she said, you know what? I'm just going to do it. And I want to get it over with. I just want to get it done. I'm going to re-record everything, put it up there, and move on to my next era. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to do my next thing. Instead, choosing to double down on doing, I'm going to have this whole era all over again. That completely brought in a new audience to Taylor's prior work. It made a bunch of people really invested in the cause of the master recordings. Like, if she had just re-recorded it and uploaded it, there wouldn't be this. There would be no Eras Tour.
No, that's honestly so true. Like, I actually have never really thought about that before. The way that Taylor did her re-recordings is so different than the way anybody else has ever done their own. She really, like, went out of her way to make them special. And it's like, yeah, I mean, they weren't totally self-serving. I will say that. Like, there was a little bit like, oh, this is for the fans. But, like, a little bit also it was like, I will win. Mm-hmm. I will win everything. Like, it definitely was a little bit about that. And I'm not shading that at all. I think that's exactly what she should have done because she needed to win. She needed to get his ass.
I think she also understands that when you're asking people to pay $20 for an album they've already had before, you got to offer something new.
You do.
And this was a really clever way to do that. Like, there was no critique of Taylor's version being money grab. People were like annoyed about the merch, but when it came to the albums themselves, most people thought that this was a pretty worthwhile subject.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there would be no Eras Tour if she wasn't literally going back into her old closets and trying costumes on, essentially. So my next point is, we're getting to Midnights now. Imagine if she did a Midnights tour.
Mm, instead of the Eras
Tour? No Eras Tour.
No Eras Tour.
Just a Midnights tour with a few select songs thrown in, couple of mashups, couple of stones in the mashup.
Not a couple of stones.
Couple of
Not
that's what it would have been. A Midnights tour would have been couple of stones.
It would have been couple of stones. I mean, I will admit that I have often pondered the vibe and like the setting and the theming and like the staging of a Midnights tour, because I think it would have been really like kind of dark and sexy and blue. Very blue. I think it would have been great. Sparkly. That appeals to me. But like, imagining the set list, I say, I don't want these.
She kind of gave Midnights the cuntiest treatment for the Eras Tour. It has like the most sets, the most like special effects, like the most setups.
Yeah.
She really loved it. And it's funny because at the time, that was the latest album. Obviously, when Tortured Poets came out, she was the monster and she ate everything. But for a period of time, like, it was, the Eras Tour was also functioning as the Midnights Tour. That was the purpose of it, like, to promote the new album. So it would be interesting to see how that would translate to a full show. I think because it's kind of more mid-tempo, it wouldn't be a very good show because she would maybe have to reorganize the other songs into fitting into that sonic universe. And, like, I don't want to hear Midnight's version of Love Story.
We've been there, done that. I'm sorry. Like, we really don't need to be doing the remix.
We were both Bleep when I first saw Bleep. We don't want
it. We really don't need that. I think it's so hard because it's like, I know that I got the Eras Tour and I know what the Eras Tour brought into my life, that there's no universe where I would choose the Midnight's Tour instead. And I don't even think the Midnight Stands of the world, like the biggest Midnight Stand you can think of, would not pick a Midnight's Tour over an Eras Tour. There's no freaking way.
No, there's absolutely no way. The next two projects are kind of Eras Tour adjacent. So the Tortured Poets Department, one of the great disappointments of it was that it got eaten up by the Eras Tour. It just got metabolized into the Eras era. So I'm saying, imagine if we had gotten a full rollout and an era for this. Like, imagine that she hadn't extended the tour to do the international dates the following year. She did the American leg, and then the next year was Tortured Poets year.
Now, Mama likes that. I'm interested
in Tortured Poets
saying.
Year, and then the following year, she comes back with an Eras Tour with Tortured Poets Incorporated instead of, like, shoving everything in at once. And the thing is with Tortured Poets is that, like, I think it would have gone down better if she had given it a minute. But also, could it have gone down worse because it would have been scrutinized relentlessly? Part of the good thing about Tortured Poets is that because there was so much information, a lot of the true humiliations were not realized by people. And instead, they focused on, I hate you for blocking Billy from number one, which is great. Thank you. Let's do that instead. But endless days of press after press. Can you imagine her giving an interview about Tortured Poets? Even in the Eras Tour doc, she was like, so don't talk to me about Tortured Poets.
No, I actually really can't imagine. And, you know, it's kind of like Reputation in its own way, where it's like the more she would have said about it, I think the less special it would have been. Does that make sense? Like the more you give, the less it becomes. And I'm not saying like I would have loved more music videos. I would have loved a special tour or at least like some kind of special performance of it. I would have loved, you know, a little bit more focus on it. But when it comes to like explain it, extrapolate upon it, like give us more, more, more.
No, it's all there.
It's all there. You know what I mean? You either get it or you don't is what I say.
Meanwhile, we get minute by minute analysis of the following record that we didn't need, which is called The Life of a Showgirl. So my thing about Showgirl, my main thing about it is, imagine it came after Takeagement. Imagine it came after Takeagement, pre-wedding. She had sat on it for 6 months longer than when it was actually finished, gone back in and made some revisions. If she had taken her time and just focused on finishing Tortured Poets and the Eras Tour while doing the Eras Tour, I think she would have approached the creative task of another album with a different lens. Also, her relationship with Travis developed more in that period. Like, they got engaged. Yeah. So there would be more stuff to write about. I think she was also refusing to draw us a real character portrait of who she was talking about too. And I think that feeling more solid in the relationship, knowing that it was going to be forever, that might have made her feel a little braver to give some more insight. But imagine that she had just waited.
I think waiting is the key to a different showgirl. I think patience, and I think I understand the reasons why she might have pushed it out sooner before the keyboard warriors appear. I understand those reasons quite well. But I think there is something to be said about just like, you know what, let's table it for a second. I'm into some of the things that I've created, but I think we could do something better. You know, I think we could come back and workshop it. You know, Max Martin, Shellback, you know, let's regroup in 6 months. And, you know, then she would have gotten engaged and everything would have changed. And she said, you know what, I just got this huge wave of inspiration because I just realized my whole life's going to change and everything's going to be different. And I have something that I've always wanted. So let's kind of focus in on that. I mean, imagine Wishlist, but it was about
that was my first thought as you were speaking. If it was given more time.
Right. It could have been so good. Wishlist is probably one of my sort of like white whales of showgirl in my sort of like multiverse imagination. Cause I'm like, there's a universe where that song goes fucking crazy. It's not this one.
No, not this one.
But like, there's a universe where, a couple more weeks carving it out of the marble, and we would have seen like a real masterpiece. Instead, we got they want the yard life and the chopper blades. Who's they? They is
who's
you.
Who's they? And
they
who's the bitches?
Y O U.
Another question.
Who are the bitches? We're asking.
No, we need to know.
Unfortunately, names come to mind. Names come to mind.
Honestly, Showgirl really was like, damn, I ran out of material. I really want to make something, but I ran out of stuff to talk about. Because when you think about it, Torture Poets was pretty much like a documentation up until she met Travis. The intervening period of time between that and Showgirl coming out was like less than a year. And that entire time she was on tour, bus club, another club, every single day. It's not like she was out in the world. She didn't have any time to like get bored and like think about something interesting.
Right.
It was just, la, 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 I'm so happy. And it's like, there's a validity to that, but there's also an intelligent way to do it. And that requires a break.
Well, what kind of PMO me the most is that the concept and the idea she had for Life of a Showgirl, it's really good. And it's like, there's something there. And like, I think we see glimpses of it on the record. But it's just not fully cooked. Again, waiting, letting it sit, letting it simmer. I think
the smell of perfume and sweat.
Right.
Where did that it just doesn't exist. Like, it's so weird to me that her conception of the album versus what it is completely different. It's giving that Dua Lipa, I'm doing Brit rock, Brit pop on futurist, what was it, on Radical Floptimism. Girl, no you're not.
Yeah, I think sometimes and this is why sometimes it's nice to have like a couple more collaborators instead of just locking yourself in a room with the same two guys for, 4 months is like another person to come in the room and be like, I feel like we're losing the plot a little bit.
Anybody want to come up for air?
Yeah. Does anybody want to come up with something else? Cause I thought we had this great conception of this record and I come in and you guys are talking about yacht life under chopper blades and a fat ass and a baby face. And I feel like we're just missing it a little bit. And we're talking about eldest daughters to the slaughter. And we're talking about everybody's
also,
so punk
Max
on the
Martin
internet.
Is not a lyricist. He's not a storyteller in that way. Like I imagine when it comes to the lyrics, he more or less really sends that up to Taylor. He might make a note where it's like this, you need to rhyme this word with this word, or there needs to be less words in this sentence. But I think that Jack is sitting there with Taylor going, what do you want to say? How do we get that out? Versus Max Martin being like, oh, that's what you want to say? Let's execute that into a great pop song. It's a different approach. And at that moment, Taylor really needed someone to come in and say, what are you trying to say? Versus let's execute it.
Right. And there's moments of great execution on the record. Life of a Showgirl title track, many people who came to Life of a Showgirl live, Evolution of Snake, know that's my song. That's my hit. Have I listened to it since tour ended? That's between me and God. But it's the greatest song ever made at the same time.
Ruin the Friendship, also great.
Ruin the Friendship. I think Father Figure, Elizabeth Taylor. But then there's the songs that kind of come out of left field. I think Eldest Daughter is definitely up there.
Honey.
Which is
that Honey is my biggest missed opportunity because I actually really love the melody and I actually like the idea she's working with. It's just, what are you saying, girl?
We need, again, a workshop, work it. And it's like, normally, if I can say my truth, not to, really glaze, but like, I think generally Taylor doesn't need a lot of workshopping. Like, that's
no, that's
the thing.
Why this
Normally,
was so surprising. Like, it's, you can hear that she's tired. I've never heard her so unfocused is what I would say about Showgirl. Like, it's not normal for her to be this abstract in a way that's not creatively productive.
It's just like, I feel like normally, like, she'll sit down and, like, over the course of a few days, she'll make All Too Well or she'll make Delicate or she'll make another great song. You know what I mean? But it's like, 4 months and this is the brick that comes out. You ever seen I'm not going to make that reference. It's, never mind.
I won't get it.
Never mind. But anyway, it's a protein brick and that's all it is.
I do love Ruin the Friendship. I do. Have I listened to it recently? No, I don't listen to Showgirl. If I can speak my truth, I just don't. I tried. I forced, actually.
You know what? I have one of those sort of like off-brand music streaming trackers so you can look in. I have streamed Speak Now, Taylor's version, more than I've streamed Showgirl, which really should tell you enough. Showgirl's not even in my top 10.
You don't even like Speak Now, Taylor's version.
No, it's known. I mean, am I a foolish one? Fiend? Absolutely. Do I love a When no. Emma Falls in Love moment? Absolutely. But those two songs, I'm streaming those two songs more than Showgirl. That tells you everything you need to know.
Well, there are vault tracks that were kept off of original albums that clear Showgirl.
Yeah, I would take When Emma Falls in Love over most of Showgirl any day.
Also, I can do it with a broken heart is Showgirl. This is the problem.
Now we're just doing it again.
No, we're just getting Showgirl. Enough. We're done with that.
We're done. Sorry, everyone.
Sorry, everyone. That's our Butterfly Effect episode. Let us know what you guys think are the Butterfly Effect episodes, moments in the comments. Do your own episode. Link us to it. And come see us on the Patreon. Goodbye.